Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, it is Toy Department time, Tuesday edition. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. I'm just going to get the curse out of the way. We're going to try to do a shorty episode today because I got places to be. So
I'm not even going to comment on that. Let's just roll. Let's roll. Let's roll.
I like that energy. I like that energy. There's a lot of life stuff to talk about. So we're going to skip all that and
big,
jump into
quickie energy
content.
Right now. That's what I got.
Big quickie energy. I like it.
To be fair, I often have big quickie energy. Okay, go.
Heyo. All right. Do you want to dig into the Top Chef first? Or you want to do the non-Top Chef first?
Let's do non-Top Chef first. Which one?
All right, well, let's start with Big Shot, because that was one episode.
They were both one episode, right?
Yeah, I guess that's true.
It's just we blew it on the one because we kind of thought that Big Shot would have more than one episode because it's a streaming show.
I didn't blow that. I mean, we got it wrong, but like, yeah. I don't think that was a – I think that was a very reasonable assumption that they were going to drop a bunch of episodes, at least three.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like some of the other shows that they've parceled out as. But
and
I guess they're doing
say,
one a week.
Like, I wish they had. And I think, you know, look, in the world where we do a podcast about TV content and we're interested in seeing if there's anything here, I expect we'll both watch one or two more at the very least. But I'll tell you this. If I was a normal consumer, I feel like if they'd had three episodes, this is a show I might have stuck with. And now I don't know that I would go back if I wasn't doing it to sort of be ready to pod about it.
Yeah, like they didn't give you enough.
No.
You know what I mean?
Well, and I don't know what the show is really at all.
And I think that's it. Less an evaluation of the show and more an evaluation of the pilot itself, like you said, right? Like,
correct. And I actually
there's plenty
of
ingredients here.
That's
right. Yeah.
I think there are a number of things here that could the skeletons here, right? The bones are in place for like something kind of interesting. And I have to say, the one thing I do feel confident saying after one, you know, pilot, pretty piloty episode, like John Stamos is making some choices here, and it's not a John Stamos I've necessarily seen before. I mean, I don't know if he was doing this in like Showtime movies that I wasn't watching, but the guy is committed to a very specific understanding of a very specific basketball coach, and it's kind of cool.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I also think it's kind of cool to see him sort of embracing middle age.
Yeah.
I don't think that's anything we've seen from him before because, you know, I mean, why would you if you look like John Stamos and
right.
you can just sort of
I mean, he's
coast on being
60.
John Stamos?
He looks phenomenal.
He has been John Stamos, you know what I mean, for, right? How long ago was Full House? And he was John Stamos before Full House, by the way.
Was he?
But, I mean, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, he was, you know, he was a person people knew. He'd been in things.
Yeah, he's 57 years old. Crazy.
Wasn't he in, like, Outsiders or something like that?
I don't know. I my first memory of him is Full House, but you know, I was six when Full House came on the air. So,
which again proves the point, right?
Yes, my whole life he's been John Stamos. Let's
right.
just put it that way.
And like John Stamos was not, he was, I think we're fair to say, not a baby when he made Full House, right? He was, you know, a grown adult.
Yeah, I mean, born in 63, so he was 25 when Full House came on, but according to Wikipedia, that was sort of the launching of his career.
Yeah, and that of course is if that is accurate.
He started correct. He started with a soap opera role at like 19 or 20.
In 1984.
82.
Right? Oh, 82?
Yep. He got a daytime Emmy nomination in 84. And
gotcha.
Then he had a failed sitcom at CBS.
Yeah, Full House is 87.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah. You did say that? Sorry, I didn't hear you say that.
Yep.
So I mean, we're coming up on 40 years of Stamos.
40
here.
Years of Stamos, baby. Yeah.
So, you're right.
It's interesting to see a different Stamos. And he's good, I think. I really thought he was good. So that part is interesting to me. And like, again, there's stuff here. You know, like a high school girls basketball team has a lot of stories to tell. I do wish that they had cast girls on the home team who could play a little.
I was actually was planning to mention that
the basketball teams are not
great.
Well, they brought in ballers for the opponents, which actually, in a way, makes the basketball scenes worse.
Yeah,
and I guess they were right.
I mean, these particular opponents were supposed to be like the really good team.
They were
right?
good. So, and the one girl clearly played hoop, right? Like you could tell the girl who was draining shots on him looked like a basketball player with the ball in her hands, and some of her teammates as well. But none of the girls on the home team looked particularly capable. And really, the biggest issue is not the most of the team. The star should be able to play a bit.
I'm just sitting here like waiting to say it. Like,
yeah.
Like your star shooter has terrible form. And that, like, she to me, just, that is a that's just a over like a detail thing, right? Like,
yeah, you really should fix that. You should cast
you don't even
somebody.
Need to be able to shoot to have good form, right? You just
no,
make it look good. You
exactly.
Know?
Well, and that's the weird thing is like she just look, and this is not a gendered thing. This happens with men all the time.
All the time.
Actors.
I would bet you money John Stamos has been in some sort of movie where he played basketball poorly at some point along the way.
It's very possible. And he has not shown off his actual basketball skills at any point, and he may not, because I don't know that he has them. So, it's just that's kind of a bummer. I don't know.
The character wasn't much of a player. He's even right. He already said he wasn't that good as a player. So
right.
So anyway,
that's a bit of a bummer. But I don't imagine this doesn't feel like a show that's going to have a ton of basketball scenes. I don't think so. We'll see how that goes.
Ooh, I don't know about that, man. I kind of feel like we're getting a game of the week. You know what I mean? So I don't.
Yeah.
Maybe not a ton, but I think there are going to be regular basketball scenes.
Yes, I think you're right that there's a game of the week. I just don't think we're going to see them playing an awful lot. You know, I think we're going to see huddles and then like the one shot or what have you.
Yeah.
Or like
yeah,
a
like,
montage
well, if they're
of
smart.
Them getting their ass kicked. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That's right. Because I'll say this, like I'm open to watching more of this, but if there's a lot of bad basketball, I'm not going to be able to.
Yeah. Now, in fairness, I don't think that the people who are making the show, I don't feel like they're really coming for the basketball scenes.
They're not
right?
worried
like,
about
the basketball
it.
Scenes
no,
are.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Are means to an end.
Well, that's right? why I don't
like they're prop propulsion devices.
Exactly. So. And that's why I don't think we're going to get a lot of like intense basketball scenes. You know what I mean? Like scenes that happen during basketball games. Sure. But, you know, not yeah. like, you know, when you watch the Last Chance U basketball, right? There's long extended hoop scenes with like you're watching them play basketball. Like that's
right.
the point. I don't think there's going to be anything designed to watch these girls play basketball, because if there was, you'd imagine they would have found
they would have got better players.
More more actresses who could play. That's right.
Yeah. Right. It's because at some point it's easier to just teach basketball players that act than it is to teach actors how to play basketball. The piloty nature of this, like I think it's interesting, like setting up the idea of like old school hard-nosed basketball coach culture clash against modern day girls and high school sensibilities, I think is interesting.
Yes.
I don't know that we have done enough character development with the girls on this team through this first episode.
Well, that's the problem, like, right? You get to know him sort of in this first episode a bit, but it's all about him. And I understand he's the lead of the show, but like clearly the girls matter here. And yeah, that's why I wish there were three episodes. Because I would have watched them, at least the second one.
And then we need to flesh out this booster who is going to be the heel of the show.
Right. Yeah. Yep. That's interesting too.
Yeah. I thought, Yvette Nicole Johnson, I believe is her name, is the principal. I thought it was really
Community.
Good from Community. Yeah. And I kind of like her in this authoritative role.
Sure. But that's part of this too. Is like she has some funny moments and some serious moments, and so does the show. And like, what exactly are we doing here? There's some mediocre basketball, and like, what's the plan, guys?
Yeah,
I would have liked to see a little more of it.
I suspect they have a plan.
Yeah,
but they didn't pull enough out in this first episode, particularly if that's all you're gonna drop. Like, you're just going to leave it at that.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. I think you could have had more of sort of an action-packed first episode character-wise, or you could have released two or three at once. But and also, how long is this going to go on for? Like, I don't know that I have 10 weeks to give to this.
It just doesn't seem like the kind of show that benefits from
a weekly rollout.
Weekly.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, but this is where perhaps there is like a teen or tween culture of discussion around a show like this that we're just unaware of.
Yeah. That
could
exist.
Week to week. I don't know.
It would be a mild surprise to me.
Agreed.
but it could
agreed.
Exist. I agree. I'm not going to pretend that I'm on the pulse of what teen girls are doing right now.
No.
Let's jump to the other pilot.
I got at least a decade before I start worrying about kids that age.
Which I thought was a lot more successful. And that would be Mayor of Easttown. Mm. I mean, you know, I don't know what can I add to the discussion about Kate Winslet? You know, like, it's not news for me to tell you that Kate Winslet is great and, you know, compellingly watchable. And completely like, the there's a lack of vanity about almost all of her performances, but certainly this performance.
Well, there's
really appreciate about her.
Right. I don't know if I would say there's a lack of vanity about all her performances, but there is a lack of vanity about her as an actress fundamentally. Right.
Yeah.
That like,
yeah, you're right. A lot of the high end, period piece type
right
roles.
Right.
A fair there's amount some... of vanity. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But she doesn't have to do, you know, there are some people who don't do a lot beyond those sorts of basically vain things. And Kate Winslet has made a career of, you know, is she the, God, I'm blanking on her name now. Elizabeth Moss of her generation.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, she's kind of unimpeachable in this. Like, she effing brings it every time, and she's full. I mean, the like Philly area accents in this show are like so good, they're almost over the top, but like right on that edge. Where like,
man, she nails the water.
Water. Like, yeah. Because that's everyone who knows the Philly accent knows that's how you immediately identify it is from water. But then there's all sorts of other little inflections.
Roof is another one that's pretty good for
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. So you got to make sure that's in the lines of the first episode for sure. And I think we got both of those. You know what I mean? And like, just so you know, we're doing the water.
I can't believe we haven't had a Wawa scene yet.
What I love too is like And this is from life, not necessarily from the show. When those words are incorporated, like when someone says watermelon, because that just is even funnier for some reason. anyway, Kate Winslet is, you know exactly who she is. Like, you know, there's something, when you meet a person in real life, you get a sense of them, right? Like, just for the most part.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Matt Kolsky. Nice to meet you. Talk for 3 minutes. Even if you don't talk about anything particularly meaningful, you get a sense of them. And that's not something that always comes across on screen. but, you know, the really great ones exude that sense of who they are in a character in the same way as when you meet a person in real life. And that's what this character is, I would say, is just like, they set some very basic parameters for who she is and what she comes from. And you just immediately understand from the vibe and like the way she walks, she has this sort of hunched posture that I think is sort of a common to former athlete type thing. She has this weariness about her that just is immediately understandable and identifiable. Like, she's just, she's so fully fleshed out as a character just by virtue of her acting.
Yeah. And I think all that's true. And I think it's also a character who kind of like wears it all on their sleeve, right? Like, the strengths and the weaknesses are just all out there up front. You know what I mean? Like, she's sort of unapologetically who she is for good and for bad. You know what I mean?
Doesn't feel like there's a lot she's holding back as a person.
Right. Right. But it does feel like there are some things she's holding back. Right. You know what I mean? Like, in terms of her emotional availability, right, and maybe some of the shit that's gone down for her, right? You know,
yes.
That I think I get a, right, you get a feeling there's some layers of her that we're going to get into at some point in the show.
But she tells you how she feels and what she's thinking in like a crass sense sort of all the time.
Yep. Yep. It's all in her mouth and it's all in her face. Right. So, I would agree with that. I have a question for you. This is something I still can't quite figure out. This is just sort of a random plot question, so maybe you can help me. So Drew, I think is his name, right? The 4-year-old is her grandson.
Correct.
Who is the mother? Who is Drew's mother? Because Siobhan does not seem old enough to have a 4-year-old.
No. Siobhan. So
she seems like the sister, right?
Yeah. Well, she, I think, is the aunt of Drew. And I think she at some point had an older brother named Kevin, right? Because we find
out. Kevin is Drew's dad.
Kevin is Drew's dad and also a turtle.
Right, and also a turtle. And we just don't know where Drew's mom is.
I think we're pretty sure that Kevin is dead, but we don't know how or when, right? You know, but the kid refers to him in the past tense. And this is like a 4-year-old. So I'd imagine dad is probably dead. And I don't think we necessarily have any idea who mom is, although my wife had an idea. Did you have any ideas?
No, I really had no idea. I was just definitely confused on that point and figured like, okay, this is a plot point that will, you know, eventually be revealed, like they're going to get into this, but
I think that's
no idea.
I think that's right. I'm with you, also clueless, but my insightful and clever wife said, I wonder if her son, Kate Winslet's son, is Kevin and the mom is the girl who disappeared.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose that could be a real possibility.
I mean, it makes a lot of sense. It would tie them together.
I just think if that is true, man, wouldn't that come up in the complaining about the poor police work? Like, also,
maybe
would you,
not.
Like, would you assign the mother? Like, would you make the mother-in-law of the victim the detective?
I mean, it's a small town.
I guess anything can happen. They probably don't have a lot of detectives. But that also seems like a little bit like, wouldn't you like, you wouldn't want that, right? A cop with those kind of personal ties to be working on a case, I would think. Anyway.
Well, but I mean, here's the scenario I'm envisioning. If that, and again, this is purely a theory, but if it were correct, I'm envisioning Kate Winslet's son dies tragically when his son is 2 years old. Mom descends into drug addiction over the following year and then disappears. And now Kate Winslet is taking care of the kid. And she's the only detective on the force.
I didn't get the sense the department was that small.
Like, really? Like, I mean, she's in that squad room and there's like seven officers and her.
Yeah. She doesn't have a partner. That officer that like she doesn't really know, right? Like there's an officer there that she doesn't really know.
But he seems you know new, I mean? Right? Because it's the first time he's seen blood on the job.
I guess that's true.
So like I figured that maybe there's two detectives and the other one sucks or everybody's on the case because there aren't a lot of disappearances. You know what I mean? Like I don't know. It seems like Easttown doesn't seem like it has a significant police force.
Right.
So
well that's kind of what I mean is that like in real life the FBI would be handling this at that point. So
yeah, maybe.
And obviously they do have one of those jurisdictional conversations, right? At one point during the, you know, during that pilot. I'm not gonna get too in the weeds on the policing policies of this fictional town.
Stop getting bogged down with the jurisdictional jurisprudence of
Yeah, I watched this twice, but the first time I just kind of happened to be looking down. Well, this is the reason why I watched it twice. I just happened to be looking down at the 1 second of the montage where they showed the fucking body. So,
at the end, you mean?
Yeah, so I missed sort of a key plot point the first time through.
So did you not see that coming?
Look, I thought something was going to happen to the girl. I just thought it was kind of unsaid in this episode. That was my impression, like that we were going to find out in the next episode something happened to her. Right?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, as opposed to six of one, half dozen of the other. She's dead.
Yeah.
Looks like violently and sexually, and in a very disturbing way.
So doesn't that raise the possibility that we have a serial predator here? Right? Strong possibility, right? And that's what this is going to be, right?
That the same guy that got her got related it. To the new case.
Yeah, yeah,
maybe.
So,
I wouldn't rule it out.
But the fact is, like the whodunit, I don't know that the whodunit of this show is going to be the key aspect. I definitely get the sense that it's really about the people of this town.
Yeah,
and you know the fact that these are people who live, die and spawn another generation or two of people all in this town, and that everybody kind of knows a lot about everybody else.
Uh-huh.
Like I think that is going to be the focus of this show.
Yeah. And I gotta be honest, like macro view, my attitude towards this philosophically is kind of keep it like another story of another look how tough it is for East Coast white people thing that like that part of me is kind of like fuck off, but to watch it, it's, you know, it's clearly something I want to keep watching. So, you know, I'm not even torn. I'm just saying when you say that it's, you know, yeah, it's a murder mystery, but it's really about the, you know, hard scrabble white folks of a small East Coast fishing town or whatever the fuck. It's like, all right, again, but
I don't feel like the story, the Easttown, Pennsylvania story, maybe this is wrong, but I feel like if this had been said in New England, I'd be right
How
there
is
with
this
you.
Not
like,
New England.
Like, it's, you
is
know what
Philly,
I mean?
Is Philly area not technically New England?
It is not.
Is Easttown a real place?
Is Mid-Atlantic. No, Easttown is an amalgamation of small Pennsylvania towns that the author of the book, or series, I don't know, that the writer grew up in.
Okay. Easttown Township is a township in Chester County, Pennsylvania, which
is, and they did shoot it in Chester County, Pennsylvania, which is interesting. So
that's, and but that's,
but I know it's an amalgam of towns because I happen to watch a little bit of the featurette that came on. After.
Okay, but my point here, my point here is that area where they filmed it and you know the towns I imagine it's based on are not like remote Pennsylvania. There are remote Pennsylvania towns, right? Like there's friggin' Pennsylvania.
Yeah, well, there's Amish country.
Well, there's Amish country, but there's also Pennsylvania that you could confuse with West Virginia, you know, like weird mountain people and stuff.
I've been in some of those towns.
Right. So this is not that. This is extended Philly.
It's Philly extended. It's like excerpts.
Yeah. You can get to Philly in an hour or so, probably.
Yeah, for sure.
So
less than, probably.
So, you know, yeah. So it's one of those weird places that I think is stuck between... You know, like you said, it's an exurb. So, like, the city's right over there, but not necessarily close enough to frequent. And, like, you're kind of disconnected from it in this weird small town, but you could see it. So, it's kind of a weird city envy situation. So, yeah, but again, like, that story about, you know, white people struggling in those circumstances has definitely been told. But that doesn't mean this won't be a good show.
Right. Yeah, for real. I'm excited to watch more of it. And this is a show that I think, like, obviously it was always intended to be parsed out weekly, but I think we'll go just fine in that direction.
Correct.
So,
see, that this, I think, it, you know, does hold you. Like, it's going to be like, ooh, let's watch Kate Winslet again. It's Sunday night. Let's do this.
Yeah. All right. Can I you ready to shift to Top Chef?
Absolutely.
Can I pitch you just a modern day bitch about Top Chef?
Wow. Okay. Let's hear it.
Okay, so at the end of every episode of Top Chef, there's a plug for Last Chance Kitchen, right? And the tagline, right, is watch Last Chance Kitchen at BravoTV.com or wherever you stream Top Chef. So I want to watch Last Chance Kitchen because I have to for this podcast. Honestly, truthfully, I probably wouldn't watch it if it weren't for this podcast.
Can I stop you?
But yeah, go ahead.
I hope this is going to be a bitch about DirecTV, because that's what it should be.
It is. It's somewhat a bitch about DirecTV, because DirecTV on demand is challenging, and particularly with, I don't know, it is disagreeable with my internet for some reason. But the first place I want to go is Hulu, which would be a place that I stream Top Chef. But no, they don't stream the new season of Top Chef. Well, I'm like, well, this is an NBC Universal show, and I have Peacock Premium. So let me go there. They probably have it. Nope. No new seasons of Top Chef and no Last Chance Kitchen. So how is it wherever I stream Top Chef that I can watch this? I would end up literally watching on a freaking laptop. And that's dumb.
I don't know what happened to you there. All I know is on my television where I subscribe to YouTube TV, I just... It's right there for me.
Yeah, you can only watch – you can watch Last Chance Kitchen on Hulu if you have their, like, Hulu Live TV uh-huh. service. But if you're just a regular I pay for Hulu person, you know, like I have the Disney bundle.
It doesn't
No Last Chance Kitchen for you. No season 18 of Top Chef for you either. So
where is it streaming? Is it only at Bravo.com?
I think so. And like I said, I think DirecTV on demand, and that's where the DirecTV part comes in. You know what I mean? But it's like, this shouldn't be that hard for me to watch this, like,
hold on,
15-minute featurette.
So are you saying Last Chance Kitchen is on DirecTV streaming?
Yeah, it's on their on-demand service.
Okay.
Like, if
so
you
again, right. This is a DirecTV complaint, because the
it
streaming
is,
sucks.
Like,
and if it
if
didn't...
If I wasn't a DirecTV subscriber, you know what I mean? Like, it... You see what I'm saying? Like, if I wasn't a DirecTV subscriber.
But if you weren't a DirecTV subscriber.
All the places that I'm streaming Top Chef, I should be able to watch this, right?
Well, but you're not streaming the new Top Chef anywhere.
Yeah, I know, but, like, I should be. That's, like, I don't understand why is it not on Peacock, right? Like,
that's a good question
NBC,
that I don't have the answer to.
like, what are we doing here? Like, make your content available.
Yeah.
I'm paying for Peacock. This is the NBC streaming service.
Well, but
you own the show. Put it out.
But do they? See, I'm sure it has to do with them not actually owning the show. Like, somehow Bravo or a subsidiary or one of the producers owns the show in a way that only allows it to stream in XYZ places. So, like, when they say wherever you stream Top Chef, they mean wherever you're watching new Top Chef, you can also watch Last Chance Kitchen. And that is true for you. It's just, it's no good because you have DirecTV, which you no longer have to have now that the, you know, NFL package is a non-issue.
Yeah, I'm working on that.
You need to change your TV service is what
I need. I need to change the setup. Yeah, that's probably where we're going. All right, let's talk about this specific episode of Top Chef.
All right,
fun to see a Pan African challenge. I thought, you know what I mean.
Well, and listen,
obviously, you know, long time coming for a lot of the contestants, feeling like to be able to see this food on TV. You know what I mean. So, sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, I mean, look. You said it and they said it. It's a long time coming. It's an underrepresented cuisine, not only on Top Chef, but like in America. And you could see how much it meant to all of the people on this show who have some element of, you know, Pan-African heritage, right? Like,
yep.
I don't know if I said that correctly. Hopefully I did. But, you know, even someone like Nelson, who didn't make the most African dish, you know, like he thinks, you know, he, part of his heritage is still of the Pan-African diaspora. So, and you could see him when he talked about it, like this was meaningful to him. Obviously, someone like Kiki or Dawn, who won the challenge, is, you know, truly moved by this opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, I think they did a great job of showing, not just, you know, doing it. Like, it could have been easy to just do an African challenge and go to the right African restaurants. But I think that they did a great job of showing what it meant to the chefs on the show.
Yes.
And I think they did a great job of showing how this food is connected to food that you might eat all the time.
Correct.
And all of that takes really understanding it and, you know, and the history of it and the technique behind it.
Well, it's just, and it's a level of like care and respect with the cuisine that is both appropriate and, you know, welcomed.
Yeah. And I think it's just one of the reasons why the show is great and why it is so exceptional in the world of reality television. You know what I mean? Like, it's,
yeah,
just,
I mean,
it's just aiming higher.
Well, right. I think, you know, the concept of class is like a complicated and often poorly applied thing, but this show keeps it classy in a very literal way that I think is meaningful.
Yeah. Well, and I just think it's like, you know, they're doing a season in Portland, and it's like we could list off four or five of the challenges, you know, just from that, right? Like, you know, the coffee and the beer thing, you know, they're going to tackle, right? And
thought it was
going to
be two
something
separate challenges, but yeah, we knew it was coming.
There's going to be something in the woods, you know what I mean? Like, there's going to be, you know, there's going to be a Portlandia thing, right? Like, you know, there are all these Portland things that you're going to think. You're not necessarily thinking about West African food. So, you know, I love that they did that.
Yeah, and I wonder also, like, how much, and I mean this in a good way, like how much of just the choice to do that was driven by Kwame and Gregory, who obviously are, you know, I think Gregory, I don't know about Kwame, but Gregory, I think, is specifically a Portland guy, and obviously of African descent, and obviously cares deeply about this food. Like, yeah. I wonder how much they looked to him to be like, how do we do this right? Because it really seemed like he and Kwame drove the process of seeing the food and tasting the food and understanding what they were really doing here. And, you know, they really took control of this episode in a way that I think benefited.
Kwame is a DC guy. Okay. But obviously African food is his milieu. You know what I mean? And, you know, and look, the show has been sort of building towards this for a couple of years now, right? Like, You know, we've had at least one African chef, I think, in the last few seasons. So,
well, yeah, and not just an African chef, but an African chef who is committed to bringing the Pan-African, you know, flavor palette to more people, right? I mean, like Eric was like that, right? Like,
yeah,
his whole thing was bringing the African flavors of his heritage into like modern fancy food. I think that's essentially what Gregory was doing a lot of the time. Like there's you're right. It's something the show has like highlighted in at least one chef for a few seasons.
Yeah. I did think it was interesting that none of the contestants seemed to worry about making African food for Kwame and Gregory in the way that they were for making dim sum for Melissa.
Agreed.
because it is the same level of challenge. You know what I mean?
Well, and a cup that, you know, at least one of the bottom people, specifically the one that lost, but probably also Chris, should really have thought about that.
Yeah.
Like, so, okay. And this is, there was some quickfire stuff I want to get into too. But since we're here with the African dishes, Brittany, like, and she did end up going home, of course, on Last Chance Kitchen, because I know you did eventually watch that.
Yeah.
She was clearly the worst person here and deserved to go home. And the fact that she talked to Tom about using chilies, she's like, I'm using chilies and stuff that I never use. But she couldn't make a flavorful dish, and then she ruined any chance she had at a truly flavorful dish by just dousing it with coconut milk at the end.
Yeah.
Just terrible.
I think that, I mean, I have never seen, I shouldn't say never seen. I think it's pretty rare that you see someone who's so thoroughly defeated at judge's table as you did in Brittany in that main episode.
And like, honestly, I did not like, it was pathetic. I didn't have sympathy. It was a pathetic display. The whole, I guess I don't know who I am as a chef thing is like, that's played out, man. You can't do that at fucking judge's table.
I read that very differently. I agree with you. I thought it was pathetic, but I had a lot of sympathy for her. Like, I think in that, I think that was real and honest. Like, I think she's lost. She's
fine,
lost,
but how'd you
right
get
now.
Here? Then why are you here?
You know, and if you go back to the beginning of the challenge, I think she was like moved and inspired by the cooking, right? Like, she just didn't know what to do with it. And I think was really just, yeah, like she was broken by the end. And I was not at all surprised to see her lose on Last Chance Kitchen for that very reason. And I don't think that is. I don't think any of that's even bad. You know what I mean? Like, I think she can go on to have a decent life as a decent chef. You
sure.
know?
Sure. She's just, that's fine. But
this
I don't.
Show does things. It's a hard show and it does things to some chefs. Like, we've seen this. You know what I mean?
I don't know. To me, the whole, like, I guess I still have to find myself thing is played out. Like, I don't want to hear it and I don't want to watch it.
But I don't. I guess I'm in a different space than that because I think that is. Right. If you know, if you're looking at chefing as an art, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, like there are artists that sort of lose themselves and lose their voice and
sure.
don't know what they want to say.
Do you want to
look?
Do you believe...
I think that's an authentic reaction from her. You know what I mean? Like, you might not like to watch it,
there
but
it
I don't
is.
Think she's
that's
any
it.
Of that. Any of it's insincere. You
I
know
didn't
what I mean?
Say it was insincere.
Yeah,
I'm saying.
I'm not saying you did.
What I'm saying is, I wouldn't want to watch that. Artist on the show called Top Artist either.
But I think you're gonna like you'll see that five or six more times at least before we're done watching Top Chef. You know what I mean? Like
No, hold on. There's a difference to me between like I need to find a way to incorporate who I am into what I'm doing here on Top Chef. There's a difference between that thing, which as you're saying, we see often, and what do you love about cooking? I don't know. Like, come on, lady.
No, but obviously, you know, their cliche about sports revealing character, competition revealing character, right? Like,
I hear that every day.
I know you do. That it's I just think that's true. Like, I think some people learn, like, I thought I knew who I was, but maybe I don't, you know? And I just think that's where she's at. And yeah, I grant you that, like, that where you are, who you are is kind of step one of the journey. Yeah.
You don't have an answer to what do you love about cooking? You don't have an answer to that? Nothing? I don't think we've ever seen that before, quite honestly.
Yeah. Well, I think like I said, seen I think people... she was one of the more broken down people on this show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well,
but
I think
I think she came to that honestly, and I think you're a little bit more jaundiced about it. You know what I mean?
I don't know. I think I'm just being harsher about how, like, whether that belongs on a show called Top Chef. Like, I think you're being sympathetic, and I am being, why wasn't she eliminated in the pre-cuts, you know?
No, that's, but remember, she came into the first challenge, like, in the first episode, she cooked pretty well, right? And there were people saying, Brittany's a beast.
I guess.
You know what I mean? Like, maybe. So I think,
I never
know,
saw her
I just think
beast,
that she had a couple, I didn't either, but I think she had a couple of pieces of failure, and it just destroyed her.
Yeah.
She
okay.
Just unraveled.
Let's move on from Brittany because she's gone. I think now that Brittany is gone, there's one person who's clearly the worst chef here. Who is it?
Oh. Well, all right. So this is a bad question for me because I'm really having trouble with names this year. I think you have to say the worst chef performance-wise through these first few episodes has been the French chef from New England who cooked Haitian food.
Chris.
In this episode. Chris, yes.
Yep. He made a bad dessert quick fire. He was the guy I was saying that was most the case of what you said about you got to realize you're cooking African food for Gregory and Kwame, man. And
yeah.
What he did was try to, or Haitian food in his case, what he did was try to cook a bunch of traditional Haitian food with none of the technique for two guys who were professionals at it.
Yeah.
And he got crushed. And of course he got crushed. And like, if Brittany hadn't poured coconut milk over everything, he would have gone home.
Yeah,
because
sure,
like
would've.
Kiki was in the bottom three for bad fufu, but she wasn't going home for bad fufu.
They liked her stew.
Exactly.
Although, I will say that her fucking that up, I think, is a really bad sign for her prospects. I've
Here's
been
my note.
High on Kiki.
Here's my
know,
note
to this point, and I'm off that a little now.
My note on this is Kiki fucked up the fufu, which is kind of unacceptable, and she knew it wasn't right, so she probably should have just left it out.
Yeah,
if she had left it out, they would have been like, "This is not much. It's just a stew, but boy." It's got really good flavors, and I bet she would have ended up
in the middle,
in the bottom, right?
Well, and she had that problem in the quickfire too, right? Like,
that's
I think maybe her ability to improvise when something's not going right.
I don't know that.
Yeah,
and
she may lack that.
That and also just I think you know all the chefs, especially the good ones, have to find a happy medium between their normal amount of creativity and ingenuity and the time constraints.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Dawn finally got a handle on this week.
I thought conversely that Shota and Sarah
both being
pretty successful with their dishes is a really good sign for their prospect.
I mean,
I don't think either one of them was comfortable cooking in this milieu. Shota in particular, right?
He is so good, man.
So,
have you noticed everything has yuzu? Everything has yuzu, but he's so good at this, clearly, because that was some Japanese-ass looking shit that he put on the plate, and they were like, this tastes Haitian.
Yep. Yep. And they're all like, man, it really looked Japanese when it rolled out.
Yep. And like, you know, that's the beauty of Top Chef. There's just like these dishes look so incredible and often specific that you can imagine it from looking at it, and to have them tell you that the delivery is a total surprise based on the look is such a cool thing. And I like Shota's one of these dudes who's going to be in the top three of either the quick fire or the elimination every single week. He's just too good. And Sarah is kind of in that zone right now too.
Although they're in the previews, there's definitely you're really talented. you just screwed this one up. So I think that one of those, there's a good chance that one of those people's winding up on the bottom this week.
And look, even other than Chris right now, this competition is so good that it really feels like anyone who has a rough week can go home. Every single person in the Elimination Challenge. And that actually is, I think, one of the reasons Kiki was in the bottom, even though they liked her stew. Like, there weren't any other dishes that could have gone in the bottom, really.
Yeah. I think that it is I think that it's interesting. I felt like Gabriel really cemented himself as the fessy Top Chef in this episode.
In the first 10 minutes of the season, he cemented himself as the fessy. And the Chicago guy was like, I'll say what everyone's afraid to say. This is too
white. Richard Blaze.
Yes.
That was Richard Blaze, yeah. That was like obviously we don't do a bird of the week on Top Chef.
But that was it.
That was it.
And he was the whitest guy eating.
Right. That's why he's like.
Yes. Incredible line. And it was so true. And you didn't have to have him say that. You could see it. Like,
right. But they wanted it in there.
That's right. Because you're like, that clearly is going to taste good. But also, it's just like, it's so friggin' 3 Michelin star nonsense.
Yeah. And Tom went in pretty hard on the mashed potatoes, like the designer mashed potatoes.
So he probably would have ended up in the bottom three if Kiki had left off the fufu, right?
I don't know about that because
that's the thing, because clearly overall it was delicious.
Yeah, it was delicious, right.
And I feel
this is
like
the kind of thing where if it was like late season, you know, where it's like one of those where like it's, you know, small mistakes, except that's when he would have gone off.
This is exactly what I tried to say to you last week. And you were like basically telling me to shove it up my ass. Like we usually don't get to the point where great dishes are going home or great dishes are in the bottom three until, you know, the last few weeks of the show. And I feel like we're a week away.
Yeah, maybe. Although I think we're gonna see some more people make some more mistakes.
But it's gonna be like, oh my god, Avishar had a bad day and he went home. But that guy's great. You know what I'm saying? Like all these, and the one person who, once again, they go to Jamie for an ITM, and you're like, this woman is overmatched. She can't. She's freaking out. Look at her. And then she just cranks out a stunner.
Yeah. Like, well, all right. That chick is something else, man. Yeah. How seriously are we taking Jamie now? Like,
Pretty seriously.
Do we need to think about her as a real contender? Like,
yes. I think every
the top a couple times.
Listen, I'm telling you right now, every single person left besides Chris and maybe Kiki is a contender in my eyes. All of them have done something. Like, Brittany was a non-contender. Chris is a non-contender. Kiki is borderline because, like you said, she just doesn't seem to be like a Top Chef chef. But everybody else has made something that makes you go, oh, man, that's they could win.
Yeah. Like, after the first episode, I thought Avishar was, you know what I mean, at any moment. but he clearly found himself. Yeah, and like he's from that Wiley Dufresne. He has that background. I believe he cooked under Wiley Dufresne.
Yeah,
you know, and he's going to bring that liquid nitrogen.
Yeah.
Energy.
Totally.
You know,
but what? But liquid nitrogen
and his nerd energy
and liquid nitrogen for a reason and with a purpose.
Yes.
Not like goofy, you know, liquid nitrogen created crumble around the outside. Like, I'm going to do something creative with this layers. And you know what, by the way, because we didn't really talk about the quick fire. Like, I feel like maybe 3 people followed the brief because most of the layers were bullshit. Like, I don't know if you're with me on this or not, but when I think of a layered dessert, the quick fire challenge was a layered dessert. And Padma even said, you could make a tiramisu, you could make it, you know, right? That's what I'm thinking. Layers. Distinct layers. And mostly what we got was like a thing with some other stuff on top.
Yeah.
Like putting stuff on top of a thing doesn't make it a layered dessert. That's just stuff on top. So I didn't like, you should, there should be a cross section where you can like see specific layers, not just like a bowl of porridge with some toppings.
Yeah. I think his quickfire win had the greatest face to success ratio I've seen on the show. Like, yes. I don't, I've never seen worse eating faces result in a winning dish before.
Yes. They even, they did a record scratch moment when Padma was eating his Buckeye. Yeah. Cause she was chewing. Yeah. And I think what's so funny is his quickfire with the like one bite layer, but legitimate layers, distinct layers, right? That's the sort of outside the box thing that works especially well when all the other ones look the same.
Yeah, but I agree with that.
But they didn't even look the same, and he still won because it apparently was so delicious.
Yep. Yeah. So good for him. As you said, and we've said a few times now, it's a really deep season. So I think it's going to make for some incredible competition, and you know, the weed out period is already almost over, and we're not even like that close to Restaurant Wars yet. So
no, we just started the damn show, and like all of these people are tremendous. And by the way, I kind of think if Sasha hadn't had a bad dish with Brittany, I should point out, who clearly was substandard, I think Sasha might be part of the group if she was still on, who we totally think could win this thing.
Yeah, she's a little uneven.
She is, but she's interesting and creative,
and that's
on the fly.
That's tough for me to win a competition, right?
Yeah,
because then you have to survive all of the all right. It's Top Chef continues to be great. It'll be great next week. We don't have a lot else for homework. We're gonna watch Nobody, which is available in your home.
And look, I'm going to watch Mortal Kombat whether you watch it or not. So, you know, we'll see what happens on that front.
Yeah, Mortal Kombat might end up on the list. We'll see how it goes. But other than that, I got to get out of here.
All right.
Did we do it?
I think we did it. Homework is Top Chef and Nobody and, I don't know, maybe something else. Bye!
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.